cosmos. Countless worlds upon worlds, worlds without end. In these galaxies, every possible reality exists. And what is reality on any one world is mere fantasy on all others. Here, all is real and all is illusion. What is, what was, and what will be start here with the words, "In the beginning there was Howard the Duck."
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host with the most, Jason, and trapped in a world he never made, Sam Stepanenko.
I feel much better now.
Do you want a lozenger?
No, I think I'm good. I have some water.
Okay, good. That was, like, kind of creepy, man.
Yeah, sometimes that sore throat, talking too much.
Yeah.
We're back to backing this today. So.
Yeah, I mean, to our audience, I don't know. They won't even notice because these episodes are actually going to be quite far apart. But for reference, we did this back to back with The Getaway, even though there's episodes in between when you heard this.
Yes. Yes. So.
The magic is gone.
Yes. So, yeah, my voice was getting a little scratchy there, but some water. I'm good.
There you go. I'm doing coke.
Not that kind.
I need the energy to get through this. Yeah, no, just the one in the red bottle.
Yeah, yeah, we can't afford the other stuff.
No, we're podcasters. Of course not. All right, so this week we are going to be talking about a Marvel movie.
Kind of.
No, well, it is a Marvel movie.
It is a Marvel movie, yes.
I mean, it is...
It's not MCU.
No.
But it is Marvel, yes.
It's probably why it would take another 25 years for that to happen.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
But we are going to be talking about Howard the Duck from 1986.
Yay!
It's too bad we don't have another person in the room or something, because Sam and I love this fucking movie. and it is regarded as one of the worst, I think. Still disagree, even after what we're just watching it last night.
It is stupid fun.
It is. Like, just relax. Yeah.
I mean, I get some of the disparaging, because it does change the Howard the Duck character quite a bit, right? I mean, he's not the sort of surly satire character that he is. He's played as a straight up fish out of water, duck out of water kind of situation.
Yeah,
right?
Steve Gerber's stuff was kind of this existentialist satire noir book, a little more adult.
Yes.
I've got a good quote here a couple of quotes. They're on the Wikipedia that I quite liked. Okay, now, the creator, Steve Gerber, he basically says that Howard's about, it's that life's most serious moments and most incredibly dumb moments are often distinguishable only by momentary point of view. And I mean, the comic really was absurdist.
Yes.
At times. The screenwriter for the film, Gloria Katz, her take was, it's a film about a duck from outer space. It's not supposed to be an existential experience, which is almost the polar opposite of what just Steven Gerber said.
And Gerber really loves his character, and anytime somebody messes with it, he gets quite upset.
He did.
And he even took Marvel to court over ownership of the character
when they started developing the film. Yeah, yeah. Not the first time Marvel would go to court over the character.
Yeah,
the Disney ironically would sue Marvel because they felt the character in the comic was too similar to other duck characters. Really, it was a fight over pants.
Yes. And there's an irony there, because now Marvel owns the character.
It is. And I'm like, well, great, because I want him to be part of that Duck universe. Wouldn't it be ironic if he was pulled from a universe with Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck? But the fact, even now that Disney still owns them, they still abide by that court ruling of keeping in the pants, even though I love the original 80s design where he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and it still bugged me in the film when I was a kid. It was like, why is he wearing pants?
Yeah, and I think, because especially in the film, because he definitely resembles those Disney characters more,
mm-hmm.
right? Just by the nature of the design.
Yeah, even the designs were like that. I want to say it was Mike Ploog, but I can't remember who the original artist was. Howard made his debut in Adventures into Fear, and then his next couple of appearances would be in Giant Size Man Thing, Write Your Own Joke, and 4 and 5, and then before getting his own book and kind of shedding the comedy horror elements that preceded it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember loving this book. Even like being excited to get it, because I think the first time I remember seeing it was when it was first coming out, like 1976. Because mm-hmm. I remember being in grade school, and I remember where I was, where I read the first one. It's pretty amazing that I remember that so vividly.
Yeah, it would run for, as a comic book, for 30-ish, somewhat, 30 to 40 issues, somewhere in between there. And would also have a short-lived magazine format, similar to like Savage Sword of Conan, in that format, where they could do a little more adult. It was always, it kind of had a little more adult humor, but the magazine got even further, where they'd have some little bit of nudity and stuff. Yeah. Even, which they did. The movie guys actually were fairly good about trying to bring in some of the comic book elements. The Dark Overlord was basically a version of the character that brought Howard to Earth in the comic books in the first place. It was Thog the Unknown from blah, 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 blah. It was just went on and on and on. So they just kind of truncated it into something a little more manageable.
I think it would have been fun if they'd have done it once. Mm-hmm. And then let's just call him the Overlord.
They wound up reusing that monster in Men in Black as Mikey.
I did not know that. That's cool.
I had to read it. And I'm like, and then I thought about it, and I just didn't have time to go back to look at that movie. And I'm like, but yeah, I think it was. I think it was the same guy, the same monster, which is kind of a nice reference.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it really is. That's the thing, it was fairly vilified when it came out, but mm-hmm. it does have a bit of a cult following now.
Yeah, I just watched it's funny because, I mean, I watched it quite a bit as a kid, and then as I got older, I had it on VHS, and then once I shed my VHS, I hadn't seen it for years, and then I think I picked up the DVD, the DVD I think came out in 2009, so it's been sitting on my shelf, shrink-wrapped for the last 10 years. I have not cracked it, so I got to crack it for this episode. They had some nice special features and stuff in there, talking about George Lucas said, hey, you know, it may take 20 years, but people will realize it for the genius it was, and at the time where he recorded that, nope, hadn't happened yet. I don't think it's happened yet even now, but I think a lot more people enjoy it for what it is, because there were a lot of us kids who did like it.
Yeah, I think that it was very typical Lucas fare of the time. He had a very specific target audience, mm-hmm. but the problem is the book had an adult fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the adults are like, well, this isn't the book that I know and love. But kids like you and me, I mean, I was 16 when this came out, so I was right on that cusp.
Yeah, I would have been about 13.
Yeah, but I also remember the book, right? And I remember realizing that this isn't the same as the book, mm-hmm. but this is still fun because I was young enough to separate the two.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, it still had that 80s booby quota.
Yes.
Like, it's PG-13. Where are we throwing the tits? Oh, we're going to throw it on a duck on the planet.
Which was really fucking disturbing.
And Play Duck.
Yeah.
The Play Duck magazine.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? Why?
Quack, quack.
I mean, also, that it certainly didn't help with the audience identity crisis this movie was having, and I think that had a lot to do with its poor reception and ratings by critics.
Sexualizing animatronic ducks, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what for a casual reviewer who has no idea what comic books are about, thought this was a silly concept with a dumb idea. I mean, it is silly. It's silly fun. in remaking this movie, I'd probably reboot it rather than remake it.
Well, I have some thoughts. So when we get there, well,
yeah, I'd like to make some nods to it, but we'll get there when we get there. But interesting factoid here. This was right around the time George Lucas was building the ranch, and he was counting on this film to keep him in the black. Needed about $50 million. Didn't happen. So, I mean, this movie cost $35 million and made $21.7 worldwide. Yikes.
Yikes. Yeah, and it was funny. I was talking to Val about this time frame for both him and Spielberg, mm-hmm. right? This is where they had their misses. Mm-hmm. Right, because you had 1941 for Spielberg, which mm-hmm. was like 2 years before, and then you had this in 86, where these well-revered, skilled filmmakers just kind of missed the mark a couple times. Mm-hmm. Right? And they both, and neither of them are ever 100% successful. It's just the nature of filmmaking. But yeah, it's interesting that they both sort of hit that bump in the road at the mm-hmm. same time.
Well, what happened was to get himself, he was going to, you know, he had to liquidate something to stay afloat. Otherwise, Lucasfilm was done because of this movie. So he had an early computer-generated animation corporation that had just kind of got off the ground. And a very rich computer guy, you might know him, by the name of
BG, maybe?
Steve Jobs, maybe?
SJ? Okay.
Maybe. Yeah. Bought the company for way more than it was worth. That company is now Pixar.
There we go.
Yeah. Everybody did all right out of that deal, even though at the time Steve Jobs overpaid.
Yeah, at the time. But Steve Jobs was a visionary. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you think about 86, that's sort of like the advent of Windows. But I always forget that it was Apple computers that were in classrooms. Mm-hmm. Right? I always forget that Apple was the powerhouse in the mid-80s mm-hmm. for computing, even though most people were already starting to move over from Atari to the IBM-style computers. Mm-hmm. But they weren't affordable. Whereas Atari and Commodore were affordable as that household computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting to see that how Howard the Duck ties to the future of Pixar.
Yes. It all connects somehow.
And ironically, he would be CG animated 28 years later in Guardians of the Galaxy as a little gag.
Yes.
And he just recently resurfaced in a crowd shot in Endgame, so not a speaking role like he had in the cameo appearance in Guardians. But
it was a speaking role, but it was cut down.
Was it?
Yes, because they changed actors.
Yeah, it was Seth Green who had done the voice for the character in Guardians.
Yes, in both of them, actually.
Okay.
But then Ken Jeong recorded dialogue for Endgame.
Okay.
So I didn't cast either of them.
I wrote them down just because I wanted to
acknowledge those performances, right?
Yeah, yeah. I like that Seth gave him, you know, a New York broke.
When we get to the remaking part of it, I have some thoughts on that whole process. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as I said, the character of Howard was created by Steve Gerber, who created Man-Thing, did a lot of stuff for G.I. Joe, and created Thundar the Barbarian, another classic 70s cartoon for Hanna-Barbera. I really like that cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, on par with He-Man, right?
Yeah, and Val Mayerik was the artist who initially created the character. So there you go. I was wrong earlier. But I think Ploog did work on a lot of Man-Thing, so that was why I was making the association.
You got me this comic book stuff.
It is, absolutely. The film was written by Gloria Katz, who was also the producer of the film, and Willard Hayek, who is the director of the film, who would also be the screenwriter for American Graffiti and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes, so there's some
but this
good
would be his last directorial movie. He didn't really have the greatest track record, but
no. No, and you know, some directors have their shining moments mm-hmm. and then garbage the rest of the time, and then some directors have shining moments mm-hmm. and then the odd piece of garbage.
Yeah, and executive produced by George Lucas, who's often more associated for the film. I think a lot of times people think he directed this movie. He did not. No. He just financed it.
Yeah. And I believe that's the same for 1941 for Spielberg, isn't it?
I'd have to look back on that. I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. because they were kind of billed as Spielberg and Lucasfilms because mm-hmm. they...
Right. I know he didn't direct that. That was the Back to the Future director.
Zemeckis, yeah.
Yeah, Zemeckis.
Yeah, so, yeah. So again, it's a kind of that kind of thing where they're associated with a movie that didn't do as well because this is their first foray into maybe just producing mm-hmm. versus producing and directing.
Yeah, and the special effects, at least the stop motion stuff, was Phil Tippett, a great special effects guy. Yeah. I just wanted to mention Phil because he's awesome. The movie stars Leah Thompson, who, of course, is most memorable for her role in Back to the Future, and Red Dawn, we'll talk about someday, too. Yep. She was in that as well. Yep. Jeffrey Jones just was all over the 80s.
Yes, he was.
Everywhere. He kind of plays the a helpful professor, Dr. Walter Jennings, as well as transforming into the main villain of the Dark Overlord. Yes. And doing a good job with his manipulating his voice, and then of course the sound guy's just taking it the extra step.
Yes.
He's in lots of cool stuff. Ed Wood, Ferris Bueller's Day Off are probably the two of some of the more memorable ones.
Beetlejuice,
of course. Yes,
you can't forget Beetlejuice.
There's tons of it. He's all over those 80s movies. Yeah, and I'm shocked that we've never talked about him.
I was a little bit surprised by that too, but again, his body of work is not one. It doesn't fall in that category of remakeable. When mm-hmm. you really think about it. Right? And certainly he's just not one of those actors who... He's very careful about his roles. I mean, he picks good movies mm-hmm. or good TV series. He was one of the highlights of Deadwood. Deadwood.
Yes, that's right. I'd forgot he was in Deadwood. Yeah. And we just got the movie coming up pretty quick.
It came out already.
Oh, it's come out? Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I still have to watch season 3.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. But yeah, such a great series. And mm-hmm. I'm glad that they did do that movie to sort of give us closure. A certain amount of closure on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad everybody went back to it. This one surprised me, even though I'd seen this a lot of times. Tim Robbins was still an unknown actor at this point, yeah. and they never made the association back to this film that he was even in it. And he still, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this does not feel like Tim Robbins at all, even though you can still see how great he was and how much he was really trying to impress.
Give you character.
Yeah, give you character and impress the director in this film. Like, he was that character, yeah. that nerdy, obsessive, compulsive character of Phil Bumblert. Some dude.
Yeah, I just wrote down his Phil. I wasn't even writing down his full name.
It's crazy. But, of course, we have talked about Tim Robbins before in episode 13, War of the Worlds.
I forgot 13? He was in that, and I didn't see it when I was doing his IMDb.
No, I didn't know it was that far back, because I kept like, where is this? When did we do this? And I'm like, it was that far back. Oh, my God. And you can currently see him on Castle Rock.
Yes.
Which, of course, associates back to another Tim Robbins film.
Which King film was he in?
When he was in jail.
Oh, for crying out loud, Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank, thank you.
Yes.
Yes, can't believe you didn't remember that one.
Well, it's
not a typical Stephen King.
That's the thing is, I always forget that it's a Stephen King story because it's such a different story for King. And I wish, as much as I love his horror, I'd love to see him do some more stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, out of every Stephen King movie ever made, Shawshank and Green Mile are my favorites, the two jail movies. Ed Gale was Howard the Duck. He primarily played Howard in the suit. There were definitely other actors who played the character, as well as doing the complicated animatronics on the head. He would do
debut role too.
And he would go on to be in Bill and Ted's Adventure and Spaceballs. He got the Spaceballs role because of Howard the Duck. He's like, I got Howard the Duck on my resume. And what was his name who did
Mel Brooks?
Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks saw, hey, anybody who's in the Howard the Duck can be in my movie. And then he would later go on to do Chucky, the scenes that didn't require like animatronics and stuff, where he could do the little person running down the hallway kind of thing.
Yeah.
He'd be kind of the stunts a double for Chucky in a way.
That's a very interesting way of putting it, but yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, he went on to have a great career, and Chip Zien was the voice, and was last I know of, he was in House of Cards. There was also Tim Rose, was part of that production, and who was most famously Admiral Akbar in Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Steve Sleep, Mary Wells, Jordan Prentice, Peter Baird, and Lisa Sturtz were all Howard.
Yes, there are a lot of Howards.
I have an entire line full of Howard.
Well, yeah, when you look at the top billing, which is usually where I as far as I usually go when we're looking at our sort of connections, it's like, well, there's a lot of Howard the Ducks, but not a lot of anybody else. But there's not a lot of people in this movie.
No, recasting is going to be really easy. Yeah. I actually wound up going in a little bit different direction because of the way I was thinking. And, I, of course, my comic book background, which you all know about by now. Paul Gaffael was Lieutenant Welker. He was in a great horror movie. It's one of those great little cult horror movies that, yeah, you're going to love it or you hate it. And I love it, and I highly recommend it. It's called Session 9.
And see that. Oh, wait, Session 9? Yes, I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
I remember back in Vancouver when I was going through film school and renting this movie, and our good friends Tyler and John were with us, and holy shit, we were split down the middle. I hated that movie, I loved it. Yeah.
Everybody knows this actor. It was so much fun to see him with that longish blonde hair, but everybody knows him as Jim Brass from CSI. I think he was the only constant through the whole series. I think everybody else kind of came and went, but he was in it all the
That's
way
right.
through.
I'd totally forgotten about that. Liz Segal was one of the cherry bomb actors from the band. Most of them only got a line or two at best, but I wanted to mention her because she went on to have a good writing career on shows like Banshee and Sons of Anarchy. Mm. So, you know, sometimes these background actors go on to great things as well. Dominique Davalos was also a cherry bomb. Holly Robinson was a cherry bomb, and she would go on to do like things like 21 Jump Street and Chicago Fire. She would even do a cameo in the 21 Jump Street films. Tommy Swendelow was Ginger Moss, and I don't think we mentioned her, but she was in episode 180. We covered that movie, which was real genius, real recently.
I didn't see her. There was only one actor that I recognized from an episode we'd done before, and he's the only one that I actually looked for beyond the first page. So
Richard Edson was a character called Richie, and he was in episode 119.
Strange Days, that was the one I remembered, yes. Yeah. We gushed about him quite a bit in that episode, so we won't do it again.
Yeah. Miles Chapin was Carter, who was in Hair and a pretty cool horror movie called Funhouse. That's all the cast I'm mentioning, but there's, of course, always more than we ever mentioned, they certainly deserve their credits, but that's what IMDb is for.
That's exactly right, yes. Right, I mean, we're not going to do every single actor who did one line unless, like, there's a point of mentioning them.
Yeah. Really, when it comes down to casting, there's only really three, maybe four characters that are even worth recasting in this film, depending on what way you're going, because of the way I went. My casting wound up being pretty small, but...
Yeah, well, I only with four myself, so
that's the guys. I'm gonna run the 80s trailer before we really dive into it, and then we're gonna have some fun with Howard the Duck.
Across the sea of stars lies another world, a world almost exactly like ours. This is where he lives. He's 27 years old, single but searching. Favorite sports, windsurfing and aikido. Favorite pastimes, cigars and sex. He has everything, except fulfillment. And then one night, it happens.
Hey, good buddy, are you home?
He has a very sudden midlife crisis. He lands in Cleveland.
You do know why you were sent to me?
Listen to me, small visitor. I can explain how you got here.
Maybe you're here for some greater purpose, some cosmic cause.
Here, he's forced to reassess his career goals.
You went to med school?
To explore new relationships. To redefine his self-image.
I'm sorry, we don't allow pets on the premises.
To adjust to a changing lifestyle.
Oh, I pull it out!
Until he discovers just who he really is.
Oh, no.
A duck in big trouble.
That's a duck, man!
Howard the Duck. Trapped in a world he never made.
coming from George Lucas, a Willard Hike film, a Gloria Katz production.
All right, that was Howard the Duck, the original trailer from 1986. Pretty fun. This movie certainly didn't do too well at a $35 million budget and only 21.6 worldwide take, which we mentioned. IMDb rated this 4.6 out of 10. What do they know? And Rotten Tomatoes was... You're fuck you. 15% critic score and a 38% audience score.
Yeah, I think that
you're all wrong.
They're all wrong. They missed the point of the movie. Right? This is not supposed to be art. It does not need to be broken down and analyzed. It is just stupid fun, and it should be seen that way.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, when you look at the way the story's told, it's a cohesive story. It's told well.
Mm-hmm.
There's no major glaring things that didn't work as part of the story. So it seems overly critical.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think they lean into the comedy aspects enough, to be honest. Even because, I mean, it's inherently ridiculous already. Yeah. Go for it. Yeah. Like, why not? And embrace some of the more adult aspects of it, too. I mean, it was probably tricky to get any of this happening in 86. It's almost miraculous to even think about that this even got made.
Well, I mean, they changed Beverly's character from being a nude model to being a musician,
mm-hmm.
which I'm okay with. I think
it's fine. I kind of went back to the model look, but I mean, she's a great looking gal. I mean, Leah Thompson was definitely had it going on then. And I liked at the time, you know, you had rock, that kind of teen pop rock. I guess she was supposed to be a little more punk the way they dressed her up, but her costuming was very Madonna 80s look, which probably took hours to do that hair alone. But that's what they took it from, and it's fine. It was relevant to the era at the time.
It was. And
Leah Thompson, you know, she practiced the moves and guitar and actually did the singing, and she worked at it, and it sounds great, I think.
It does. I this is another movie where, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago we talked about The Getaway, where the performances stand out from the rest of the film. I mean, she delivers you, she gives you a character that you enjoy and engage with.
Mm-hmm. She still has that guitar, by the way.
She should.
She's actually, just a couple, I think it was last year, she has approached Marvel to write and direct something for Howard the Duck. I think she's pitching a feature. Meanwhile, Kevin Smith's developing a TV show.
An animated series.
And animated makes sense. Yeah. And I'm sure the characters since appeared in animated stuff as well as CGI appearances in Guardians.
Well, certainly he's been a persistent character throughout Marvel for since his inception. Like, he's never gone away. He's not one of those characters.
No, even when his title continuously fails, they still wind up using him here and there. I love when he just shows up in a book. I'm like, why is Howard in X-Men?
Yeah.
You know, this is great.
And I mean, he's always there as a counterpoint to something, right? And it always works well. He's in a lot of ways, and I was thinking about this when I was thinking about my remake, and I'm certainly not going this direction, but I would take some inspiration from the direction that they took with Deadpool, where he's doesn't really fit into the Marvel universe, but he's very important to it.
Yeah, I mean, here's this guy being on a completely alien planet, different from his own evolution. We see it the other way. It's the ducks that evolved into human beings, and he's not a cartoon character. He's flesh and blood. Yeah. If, you know, they drop him off a building, he goes sploosh.
Yes.
So, you know, he has no superpowers, which is great. I love that scene where Tim Robbins is testing him. Can you bend this with your mind?
Yes.
And put lasers in this board. I'm like...
Highly intelligent. Perhaps even... Wait, that's it.
We're about to see if subject has any abilities we don't have here on Earth. Any, shall we say... Mm-hmm. Superpowers.
Howard! Can you bend this?
What are you, crazy?
Howard, can you burn a hole through this with some kind of eye laser?
Can I bite your nose off with my super bill?
Howard, quit holding out. I want you to concentrate and read my mind.
Right. You're thinking... They know I'm a phony. They know I'm a yo-yo. Tell me if I'm warm on any of these, Phil.
I want you to look into the future and tell me what you see.
I see myself walking out that door.
It's just dumb. Can you?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a great way of emphasizing the fact that he's not a superhero.
No. His greatest gift is he's very proficient in quack fu.
Yeah, and which is great. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that as the comic book series progressed, Beverly does gain superpowers.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of the comic, I'll be honest. I was a fan of the character, but not the comic.
Yeah.
I loved the character, and this will play later into my remake, but my favorite issue was when they introduced Dr. Bong.
Yes. No, and I mean, I don't remember it that well. I mean, I got that information from Wikipedia, and I don't even remember what the superpowers were, but... Yeah, it's just funny, interesting that they did introduce superpowers into the book, but it wasn't Howard who got them. But yeah, and I also in the book, and I my memory is fairly vague. I remember, it's funny how I remember the first time I read a Howard book, but I don't remember a lot of details about the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
But Beverly and Howard are stay together, but I don't think they're a couple in the book.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Yeah, like they're kind of partners in crime, as it were. But I don't recall them being like quote unquote together.
Yeah, there's probably like the movie. There's suggestive scenes that maybe something happened there, but I think it's more in the magazines where it's a little more adult. But honestly, I don't know because I didn't read that stuff. I know her character. There's one magazine where she gets naked, so. Yeah.
Well, being a nude model,
makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, she was very specifically a nude model as well, which is kind of
she in the movie she comes from a bit of a sketchy background too. She's just playing dives to get by. She's not the smartest cookie on the rack. She wasn't in the comic either.
She's very disingenuous in that sense. She accepts Howard so quickly and easily, right? And I love that about the character. It's like, oh, you're a duck. Well, cool. Do you want to be friends?
Yeah, the simple, impulsive mind,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And not being freaked out. Well, she was initially in the movie. But
like anybody would be.
She adjusted pretty quickly. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, I mean, this is just a person, and you just made that person feel bad, which is good. That there's a message of acceptance in this movie, and it does play through at how people react to him, and I love how he initially when he arrives and he's been pulled from his home, and just the craziness of the world. I mean, it feels like the Warriors actually just picked him up out of the bucket just to play prank at the club.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. It's like, well, this is something weird. Let's mess with people with it.
Yeah.
Right? And I love the scene where he's finding it, where he's trying to find a job and he's working in that massage parlor, quote unquote.
Oh, no. That was it was such a weird bathhouse. Yeah. But it was like all like whirlpools and saunas and everybody was fucking all over the place.
Yeah. making out because it was
a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
But they weren't hiding what was actually happening there.
No, and that's one of those nods you're talking about to the original book is the adult nature of the book, right? You're taking a PG-13 audience into a massage parlor and then it's not something that a 13 or 14 year old mind is going to get, right? Is it well, big deal, right? Why is everybody making out in this sauna place, right?
I mean, there are times where this movie is very sexual, that it's very suggestive. And of course, when Howard comes on to Beverly, is just kind of ha ha, I'm playing some charm, and then she's like reverses it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're not interested in a human, and it makes him uncomfortable as well.
Yeah, but then at the same time, he's also stimulated because they do that little bit where the feathers on his head go up, which is still funny. I mean, it's stupid humor, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Right? And there's nothing wrong with stupid humor if it's done well.
Yeah, and that's where I can conceive, like, it's like Deadpool. It's a character you can bring out as an R character as long as you're honest to what it is. I mean, that's the problem with the 80s is that trailer looked, and it had that middling rating, it looks very kid-friendly. Yeah. And, I mean, when you see a title called Howard the Duck, you think it's going to be a kid's film. Yeah. And it's not as kid-friendly as you might think.
No, it's not.
It's not bad for kids. I mean, I watched it when I was a kid, but there's certainly, I would go a little bit older, like moving into that teenage range, because there's some titillating bits. Yeah. And like I said, there is the duck boobs. which yes. even then is probably like, hey, would freak out some parents.
Yeah, well, I or they'll just go, what the fuck? Because
yeah.
that was my thought. I remember thinking that when I saw it the first time, when I was in the theaters, and I was thinking it when I watched it again this time, and yeah. every time I watch it, I'm like, really?
Yeah, I think I saw this in the theater as well, and I was like, why are the boobs that I got to see the ones on the duck?
Yeah, there's this mixed feeling of what the hell?
I feel like I got
disappointment.
Cheated.
Yeah.
Because yeah. we were so close to seeing Leah Thompson's. And then she's like, no, nah, I'm kidding. I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was that disappointment there, especially as a teenage boy. Right, I mean, in this Me Too age, you have to be careful about what you say. Mm. But when you're 16 years old and your hormones are on fire,
uh-huh. right,
any chance to see boobs is a good chance.
Yeah,
it's a good thing.
We said that on the podcast before, yeah. and it's at that age where you're of discovery, and so you're like, yeah, okay, I can't watch these R movies yet, but I want to see that.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into that whole discussion about sexualizing women because we're not. People who do that, but there's also nature that's where you, when you have an opportunity to see nudity, it's
generally fine with it.
Yeah, it's generally enjoyable, and I mean, particularly if it's in context with something as an adult,
yeah.
it's not
yeah,
necessarily
no, and
a bad
I,
thing.
Yeah, so I like the way the movie handles that.
Yes.
I mean, there's no point to the bathing duck boobs at all. That didn't need to be there.
But. No, that was gratuitous duck nudity.
Yeah, that was to be a PG 13 movie, yeah. not a PG movie.
And you know, as an adult, it's kind of funny because yeah. you knowing full well that's what they were doing. It's like, well, we're going to put boobs in, but we're not going to give you yeah. people boobs. We're going to give
yeah,
you
that
duck
was
boobs.
For the older audience yeah. for sure.
Yeah, yeah. yeah no, and it's funny now, right? I yeah. mean, it's still what the fuck, but it's still funny.
Yeah, and that's where the humor is.
Yeah,
and I like the idea of like pushing it. Like Howard, once he acclimates, is angry. Like he's I hate this planet. fuck you all.
Yeah, and
duck you all.
Yeah, and that's what I want to bring to this character is that anger that he has in the books,
mm-hmm.
right? Is you want him to be angry, but effective and still compassionate.
Yeah,
right. Because that's kind of who this character is.
Yeah,
they almost get there with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they tone it down because of the nature of the film. It's not supposed to be the book. It's a new vision of the character.
And I like that the first half of the film really is just him trying to acclimate.
Yeah.
And trying to be part of the world. Initially, he slaps away that help before going back after the failure at the rub and tug.
Yes. Exactly. Because, yeah, he takes...
Or should I call it a rub and tub?
That one's a rub and tub, yeah.
It's a rub and tub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or tub and rub?
Tub and rub. Yeah.
I don't know.
Rub in the tub.
It's just a dirty, dirty place.
It was, yes. Yeah. But, yeah, he finds himself... back at the club where a club that Cherry Bomb is performing at, and manages to overhear the girl's manager trying to screw them over for the money, and so he busts out the quack fu and defends her honor.
Yes, and manages to get their money and fires their manager
with no authority whatsoever. They're all happy. You fired our manager? Yeah, he was a dick, but shouldn't we be doing that?
But they also thank they appreciate it.
They appreciated it, but I was like, the first thing I thought of, well, why, if you all hated your manager, why didn't you do that?
because he had their money.
Yeah.
Right? He had them over a barrel, right?
Yeah. Right? He was pimping.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and that's, again, shows to Howard's character, mm-hmm. right? That he has that compassion and he's loyal to people who are loyal to him. And again, you want to include that in whatever we end up doing.
Yeah, so that kind of reconnects Howard to Beverly, and Beverly thinks of this friend who I guess is probably the boyfriend of one of the Cherry Bombs, because it did seem like there was a relationship between another band member and Phil.
There did, and that's I was really confused by that, to be completely honest, because I didn't.
Yeah, because it is not established till later.
Yeah, like the end of the movie.
Well, no, there was a point where he busts in with some theories after their initial meeting, and he says, like, no, sex later.
Yeah.
No time for sex.
Yeah. That's right. Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
But I'm like, your priorities are all screwed up, Phil.
Yes, but yeah, Phil, yeah, he's...
Ideally, he wants to get famous off of Howard.
That's what he's thinking. He wants to get recognition within the think tank where he works.
Yeah, he's just a lab assistant, you know? Yeah. He's the guy that cleans the lab, gets everybody coffee, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they even call him the janitor at one point in the movie, if I remember correctly. They don't treat him with an awful lot of respect.
No.
And it isn't until he gets to Dr. Jennings that he starts to... get some respect, but at the same time he's also a little goofy and clumsy, so you get the, but he's knowledgeable, he's very much that 80s stereotype of the geek. Right, it's like, I know lots of stuff but I'm incompetent, and that's kind of the way they play this character.
Yeah,
I've kept Phil but I've changed him quite a bit.
I've kind of fused him in with a comic book character. But we'll get there. And yeah, through Phil he managed to convince some actual scientists of Howard's existence, because they found a feather in their lab from an experiment they were doing which had went awry, and that was the experiment that pulled Howard from his reality to ours.
But they only got one feather versus him.
Yeah, but it was enough to cross-reference once Phil wound up stealing that tail feather off of Howard. They were able to corroborate that, yes, this is where this came from, this feather that we found came from. So he came from this reality. So now there's a theoretical way home. So they discussed helping him stuff. Meanwhile, Dr. Jennings, which was Jeffrey Jones, heads back to his lab to fire it up because, you know, got to do it tonight because the alignment is still there. And of course, hey, you fucked up once, you're going to fuck up again.
Yes. And there's an explosion or something goes seriously awry this time.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes bad and the lab's in disarray and people are injured and there's cops and firemen and all sorts of people around. And Jennings is missing. And what's happened is he's become host to this creature that is dubbed the Dark Overlord, a race of Dark Overlords.
Yes.
In the comic, this is that Thog thing that was responsible for pulling Howard into the reality. And what happens in the comic is fight ensues with Man-Thing and Jennifer Kale, and he is put back into the Nexus of Realities and then falls off one of the stones, and that's how he winds up in Cleveland.
There we go. Maybe their origin story is kind of interesting.
Yeah, doesn't really matter that much. But yeah, in my inception of like a reboot of this, most of this has already happened.
Yes, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, he's established them because they've already kind of done it in the MCU already.
You were on the same page on that. Yeah. And I want him to be a PI like he is in the books.
Mm-hmm. And that was the noirs thing that I talked about earlier, that element's gone entirely. Yeah. In the movie, he finally becomes the cherry bomb manager by the end of the film when he's trapped here. Yeah. He sacrifices his way home to defeat the Dark Overlord.
Yeah, exactly. And Jay's wearing a Howard the Duck t-shirt, by the way, everybody. And I'm looking at the shirt and I'm going, that's the look I want Howard to have.
Maybe we'll take a picture of it and then we'll stick it on Twitter when the episode drops.
There we go. That's perfect. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's definitely the look that I'm most familiar with, and it's definitely the most on true to the original character. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of Howard in his fedora and his jacket and tie, right? Mm-hmm. Pants or no pants, I don't care. I'm not that hung up on pants. But yeah, that's the look, right? Yeah. And that's kind of the look they have in the MCU, although he looks really, really rough in the MCU version.
He's pretty thin. I guess he was trapped in the tube a little too long.
Yeah, so I'd maybe tweak it out a little bit to make him look more like the version of the comics.
But keep the cigar in his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely part of who he is. So yeah. I'm glad the movie had it too.
Yes, which is tricky now in this this huge anti-smoking.
It is. There's a certain era, especially when Joe Quesada was running Marvel, that there was no smoking. Guys like who are famous for doing it, like Wolverine and Nick Fury, lost their stogies. Yeah. It's just certain characters that should have them. They're so associated with them, and Howard's kind of one of them.
You could even have a fun joke about it. It's like he's got a cigar, but it's not lit. He's like because, or you could have
it was clearly never lit because you never saw any smoke coming out.
Or even better, you could have the box of cigars on his desk, and he's vaping because he can't smoke anymore. That'd be a nice nod to it.
Yeah, that'd be all right. I like that idea. That'd be a funny joke.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards that now.
Yeah. I mean, in my version of the remake, I would like him to keep bringing up and recounting his origin story of being pulled down every time it got it interesting. And we'd actually see it stuff happening. And just as things got interesting, he'd get it get cut off.
That's so weird that you thought that way, because that's the way I was thinking too.
I'm like, don't show him the good bits. Just tell him the good bits. But show him like the boring bits with the interesting characters.
Yeah.
Just as things are about to happen. And then, oh, you know, there's a knock at the door or whatever. And he's cut off mid-sentence. And you never quite get the full story.
I like that. And that's essentially where I was going with it too.
Just keep pulling the rug out from the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, and then do it at the end.
Yeah. Well, I have it with purpose, because certain elements from the story will play into my remake.
I'm liking where you're going with that.
Yeah, so there's little nuggets he's dropping, and it all plays out in the finale of the film.
I like that. Yeah, and then you could have the
whole... Because these are connections that he can pull on those threads again when he's in trouble. In this MCU, if we're going to input it into the current MCU, he's an established character now. Clearly, he's already been around and shit's happened. Yes. He's wound up in space and cosmic things. Oh, yeah. And so he's been around the block a few times.
Yeah, no, he's back on Earth after Endgame kind of thing is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Right. So, like, there's a lot of things have happened. He's met a lot of people, some that may not have been established yet in the MCU. But that's what the flashbacks are for.
Yes. Right, and I mean, I would love to have like a one scene with Deadpool in there, just because I'm seeing them both as being sort of R-rated films, mm-hmm. and I think you'd have a lot of fun with Deadpool, just like a little pop and cameo doing those things that Deadpool does.
I'd like to see Deadpool, yeah, walking one way with his sword ready to go into something, and sees the duck, and the duck goes back, and they look at each other. Nope.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the comics, they have actually interacted in recent years, so
yeah. No, I can see that. It could be like a little nod to that, mm-hmm. That's why I was thinking it'd be a fun nod to mm-hmm. to.
I think there was a one shot called Deadpool the Duck. I don't even know what that one was about, but
yeah but that would be I think it'd be fun to have those nods to the other sort of R-rated Marvel characters, mm-hmm. right?
And it should be an R rating, and so you can move it a little. And it's not so you could throw like duck boobs into the film. It's because that's where the comic was,
yeah.
Especially the magazine, and playing to these more adult jokes.
Exactly. Really embrace that part of the character.
Yeah, the existentialism and along with the absurdism.
The absurdism and the satire and the commentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like all those things that were in the original book that were lost in the remake.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because the original. I mean, the story is pretty straightforward. Like you said, like the first third to half of the movie is sort of him adjusting to being on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The second half is your standard hero fights villain kind of story,
mm-hmm. right? And it's very mustache twirling type of when I get through, I'm going to rule the universe.
Yeah
it's silly. But first we got to gestate into human being.
Yes, well, and I love that.
That's what puts Beverly and Phil at risk. So
I like the fact that he's a host, but it takes some time to take over, and there's that mm-hmm. gradual progression.
And the makeup's great,
and the makeup is fabulous.
Yeah.
The Industrial Light and Magic special effects, however, didn't hold up as well.
No, I mean honestly, some of it was probably even dated in '86.
Yeah.
But. I thought they did fine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, we're, I think, apologists for this movie rather than sitting on the other side of the fence. Yeah. But
yeah, and I do want to mention the fact that the tentacles that the Overlord has are incredibly phallic. Like, I mean, tentacles by their very nature are, especially horror movie and sci-fi tentacles. But these ones, it was shameless.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up too, because it kind of grazes her cheek, and it would have been interesting if it grazed her leg a little bit before it. It was basically, they need energy, these creatures, to facilitate their metamorphosis and the increasing of use of energy for their powers being fully developed as they're mutating. So when he's driving that truck, by the way, when they first pick him up and they find him and they're escaping the facility, why did they get the guy who could barely stand to drive?
That's a good question.
Like, Beverly. Like, this is just asking to get in an accident.
Yes, because, he's clearly out of it.
Yeah, clearly not capable of driving. He shouldn't have been driving. But anyway, so, you know, once the alien finally took over, he, again, takes Beverly because he needs a host for another one of these aliens to inhabit, or host body. and this tongue tentacle thing comes out of his mouth into the truck lighter socket, just so he can grab some more energy. They eventually wind up at a nuclear power facility where, you know, bad shit happens.
Yes, and he absorbs all energy, and that's where he says the "I feel much better now" line that I've already done in the voice, and I'm not doing it again, because it is really hard on the voice. Kudos to Geoffrey Jones for doing that voice, because it is, it's very, like, it's fine to just sort of goof around and do it as once in a while.
It's well in the different direction of his voice, normal voice. So
yeah, so your throat does get sore when you do it for any amount of time.
No, it was pretty good. It comes off silly sometimes, but I mean, I love how ridiculous the diner scene is, because this is like a country town bumpkin diner. It is called Joe Roma's Cajun Sushi. So imagine a classic diner mixed with a sushi theme.
Yes. So, Cajun sushi.
Yeah, Cajun country sushi. It's just insane. But I think it works even better now, because, I mean, sushi places are fucking everywhere.
Yeah, and Cajun's a hot thing. Everybody likes their burnt food.
I mean, I, honestly, with tacos at their height of their popularity, that needs to be thrown in there too.
Yes.
Maybe that's where Deadpool shows up. Yeah. I almost want to keep the Cajun sushi restaurant, taco fusion, whatever.
I think so too. Yeah. And it has to be divey like that too.
Oh yeah. 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 It was so ridiculous and weird themes and just hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, you can even have that one bit of dialogue where it's like, yeah, no, I come in for the blackened tuna taco or soft taco rolls or something like that, right? It's like, have something like some really absurd thing that he comes in for.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, I can even hear Ryan Reynolds' voice going, "They're delicious."
He'd arrive just after it all got destroyed. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to do that scene, but I think we still need the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Just because it is absurd and satirical, certainly given the foodism of our current climate, right, where people are about these fusion foods and eating and stuff like that. So, yeah, that'd be a nice little satirical moment, yes.
Mm-hmm. I did like that the alien was upset he didn't get his eggs, because Howard was freaking out about the eggs.
Yeah, well, I'm a cannibal, right?
Yeah.
Although you could have, again, another satirical fun moment there where Beverly goes, "Well, they're chicken eggs."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Oh, well, then."
Oh, yeah. They deserve it.
Yeah. Right? They missed an opportunity there. I mean, conceptually,
it was disturbing that the entire crowd turned on Howard and they were going to cook him.
Yes.
They were going to chop him up and cook his ass.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he would have been delicious.
We talked about Dusk last episode or in the Getaway episode too.
That's right. Yeah.
So
a little bit. Yeah.
Connections everywhere. No,
the confit.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're preparing to eat a sentient being, I mean, that's cringeworthy of it in of itself.
Yeah, there are just natural reactions that I can't really associate with. Like, okay, the natural racism that is inherent in human beings, that I can understand, but that was just irrational. Like, and most of the reactions I think are irrational. I mean, I don't know if I would react to in fear so much as, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to need a minute. I'm going to need a minute to process what I just saw.
Yeah, certainly shrieking and running away wouldn't be a response. It'd be I'd really like to get to know that.
It's like the cop's reaction to him. He didn't do anything. They're arresting him, and they want to take this suit off of him. They strip him down to not find a zipper. And what are we going to charge him with? Illegal alien.
That was funny.
I mean, it's funny, but that's the kind of absurdist thing you would expect in from the comic book stuff.
Yes.
And they need more of that. Like, to tackle racism in that kind of way is, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it is a way to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's speciesist.
Yeah, and it's timely, too, with what's going on in America, with the wall and the, I'm going to say it, concentration camps.
Was there a Howard the Duck where he ran for president issue?
No, he actually ran for president.
Yeah.
Was it
an actual campaign?
Yeah, there was a joke campaign.
Yeah.
That, and people actually wrote in votes for Howard the Duck. He actually got votes.
Okay, because I don't remember a comic book, but I remember seeing like weird advertising in the 80s.
Yeah, there's all kind of this sort of parody promotional material that was sent out.
Yeah, he wouldn't have separated children from their families.
No. But yeah, so yeah, he was actually
Actually, he might have. He hates humans.
Yeah, most
he's
of
got
them.
He's got his own issues with us.
Yeah,
rightfully so. And I love how they establish like they had Daffy Duck and the duck on duck violence and the violence perpetrated on him, and of course the eggs and. He could have walked through Chinatown and seen ducks hanging.
Yeah.
Like there's things, lots of things they could have done.
That we can certainly do. I mean, yeah. just because he's an established character, you can still have him reacting to this, what he views as a lack of sensitivity mm-hmm. to him.
Yeah. I can see, like, in our movie, since he's established, I would think he would also be established within his community in Cleveland.
Yes.
As well, since he'll be established. I think we're going to make him an established PI.
Yeah.
Like he is in the books.
Yeah. Certainly. And keep with the original character as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the look that they gave him, like I said, aside from him being very rough looking, he was wearing the brown suit and tie and
yeah hats, right? For a person who got dragged in on from his pajamas from another universe, he had a lot of changes of clothes.
Well, and he makes a joke about it having to shop at the kids section,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I don't know how those kids' pants fit in that big.
Yeah, I'm in them like fat kid section.
Yeah, because he has a big old butt.
He's got a badunk.
Right, and yeah, I mean, he doesn't wear shoes, which is just fine,
right? Yeah.
But yeah, I like that we're for the large part on the same page in terms of where we'd like to see him go.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you're having similar ideas. Like, yeah, you know, I'm approaching this as a reboot. Let's face it, this movie didn't work. It still won't work the way it sits, but certain aspects of it do.
Yeah.
So I would like to just like, okay, yes, go back to a little bit of his comic origins, where he's like, oh, I had this. Got pulled down and I had this crazy thing happen and there was a plant thing.
Yeah.
And a hot chick in a metal bikini and they sent me through this cosmic corridor and I slipped and I landed in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And, you know, this would happen in flashbacks and you'll see bits of this happening with Man-Thing and Jennifer Kale, but we don't get to see the really good bits actually happening, but this establishes them because I want them to play later on in the climactic battle. And this also works well because Marvel likes to set up other characters in other movies.
Yeah.
So I had that in mind of like reintroducing Man-Thing actually has a movie, folks. Most people don't even know it exists, but it does.
Yes, it does.
It's not particularly good, but
like most of the Marvel movies of that era.
No, it's recent. Well, not that recent anymore. It was about a decade ago.
Is it that recent?
It was very low budget. Yeah. It was very low budget. There was a comic book tie-in that I really liked, and then I went into the movie. I'm like, there's some neat ideas here, but they did it on the cheap. Like, Man-Thing's barely in the thing. Like, it's suggestions of a creature existing in this swamp. So, you know, we can have a lot more fun with this. I mean, the Man-Thing's inherently silly anyway, but a great horror character at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a good combo thing that you can play with. And
and again, we're on the same wavelength there in a lot of the ways. Not exactly, right? Obviously, we're not going to have exact same thought processes, but
no.
But yeah, I wanted to acknowledge that original origin story a little bit more.
Yeah. Honestly, this the way that's going to play out is there's this little weird little plant in his office.
Yeah.
That if you're paying attention, you'll see it. If you're not, you might not. Yeah. That'll play later because it's a little cutting of Man-Thing.
Yeah, it's his buddy because they did interact for at other points, right? So, I mean, there's those connections.
Yeah, and just think about having this thing and you're fighting a bad guy and maybe you're winning and he's like, hey, but not you're winning-ish, but you're not quite going to get there. And he's like, hey, you know what? Anything that knows fear burns at the Man-Thing's touch, and he has this plant that he can use.
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't even turn into the Man-Thing. He just pushes it into this guy's face.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Ah!
Yeah, I can see that. That would work.
And Jennifer Kale's the one that gifted it to him. Or maybe I actually did cast her, but
I didn't. Because I didn't.
Because I find her an interesting character and what they've done with her over the years.
Yeah, and I don't know much about the Man-Thing stories, so so I didn't.
Yeah, but that's the great thing. You don't have to do much there.
No, exactly. And that part wasn't fully formed, so I didn't cast that way.
Yeah. Right?
And
do you have a villain in mind?
Well, I kind of wanted to keep the Overlord character somehow. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I wanted to kind of have that in the background, yeah. Like as part of his origin story, yeah. Rather than the main story. Yeah. Like I said, I gravitated toward Dr. Bong, so I wanted Dr. Bong. Yeah.
Right, and my casting would still work for that. So
okay, so my character for Dr. Bong, like his comic book characters, Lester Verde. The character of Lester, before he becomes Dr. Bong, had a relationship with Beverly. I think they even marry in the comic books.
Again, I don't recall. Like I said, I didn't read all of them. I just remember liking the few that I have read.
So, like, I kind of fused this idea of Phil, because he was a scientist. Yeah. Somehow, they never explain how he loses his hand, like some sort of guillotine accident or something. Yeah. So that's where he gets this round club thing. And his head's like a giant bell shape. And when he hits it in certain ways, it has different abilities. So like he hits it one way and it's a concussive blast. He can transport himself through space, like transportation, like a ability if he does it. Hits it a certain way and maybe mind control. I don't know. Like I don't know the Howard stories that well, but I know like that if you think in the way of sound manipulation and ideas of vibrations and what they might do.
Yeah, right? You can stun people and death them too, right?
Inherently silly character that actually can have some crazy powers.
Yeah. No, and I like where you're going. Yeah, I guess.
And he's just visually interesting.
Well, and that's the other thing too, right? I mean, you could have pretty much anybody
in there. He kind of looks like a goofy Doctor Doom.
Yeah, and my casting would actually work for Dr. Jennings / Overlord would still work for that character.
Yeah, so
actually work really fucking well.
But
actually,
I like the idea of, because I was still thinking like you don't want to do this big and bombastic like this movie did.
Yeah.
They went with a big bombastic idea, and I want to pull it back a little bit like Deadpool did.
Yeah.
Let's do it a little smaller, a little tighter. And there's an emotional like that's my ex kind of arc happening here.
Yeah. Yeah, and making it personal works, I think, a little bit better for this character.
Yeah,
rather than worlds. I mean, it's still it probably world saving in the grander scheme of things, but really what it's about is, this guy doesn't like this guy, and they fight. Is Scott Pilgrim versus the World type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And almost have that sensibility to me.
Yeah, and your B-plot could be an investigation of some sort.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be.
Yeah, and it should be related to what's happening with Dr. Bong.
Yes.
Right? Like any good PI movie, everything connects back to your main story.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of my idea. I don't know if you had different ideas, but I think we're merging our ideas here, and we were kind of on the same page at the beginning.
Yeah, certainly. I think, and actually, given sort of where you're going with that, and I'm liking it, is because I always kind of fall into that remake thing where I want to at least keep the core elements of the original story, because we are doing remakes.
Well, that's where I like the idea of like covering that origin within backstory,
right.
And so we still get those bits of acknowledging this movie through that backstory narrative, which also gets to introduce it ties it back to the comics and to Fog the whatever.
Well, and that just gave me my thought is part of the investigation is Howard finds out that somebody's trying to bring back Thog.
Okay.
Right? And it's Dr. Bong as part of his revenge on Howard.
Right. And with his abilities, he might be able to open a doorway.
Yeah.
And maybe with these new abilities that Dr. Bong, we can make, I'm not sure, because I don't think they ever see his origin. And that's where we can maybe have the origin of Dr. Bong. We could actually see the failure of his relationship with Beverly.
Yeah.
And then through his own experimentation, loses his hand and this weird shit inventions that fuse with him.
Yeah,
who knows? But yeah, maybe this was like I'm gonna get my revenge on Howard and Beverly. This world,
and I'm going to get the super powerful being that hates him even more than I do.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the Howard Revenge Squad. Oh, that sounds hilarious.
Yes, and that's kind of what I was... Right. And again, it kind of has that satire, but again, it's still very personal.
Yeah, so you can tell that origin story through the backstory of that connection. And that would explain why you maybe need an ally like Man-Thing to come in.
Yeah.
To help with this,
yes, because
that's his like Hulk buddy.
Yeah, and he's dealing with a supernatural being that they know...
Mm-hmm. And then that's why you can bring in a character like Jennifer Kale, not somebody who is adept as Doctor Strange, but certainly has her own capabilities and knowledge with these in the supernatural.
And it would be very Deadpool, right? Like you introduce them, in part of the movie, right? Knowing full well that they're going to show up again at the end game. Mm-hmm. Sorry, guys, I had to say it, but it's true. It is the end game of this movie. Mm-hmm. But the final battle, if you want to call it that,
yeah.
Right? They show up at the final battle just like they did in Deadpool.
Yeah, and,
right?
And I like that they're not there in the present, so you're kind of establishing them early as a connection, and then you can call them in later. Yeah. It's like, hey, yeah, we did that for a reason.
Yeah, and I'm liking that direction. Yeah, we still have the nods to the original movie that way too, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and we're feeding the MCU's desperate need to create new characters or introduce new characters.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a desperate need, but certainly their proclivity to do it, yes.
Yeah, right? Yeah, for possible spinoffs, and then it'll feed the speculators in the speculator market for a while.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm liking that idea. I like where we're going with this, because it gives us a new story, but acknowledges the original movie in the same way.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't think a remake of this movie would work. Like, it's just, you kind of have to travel in a different direction, and by using little elements of it for backstory, that's great, because I mean, people are aware of it. I'm sure, despite its failure, it's done probably fairly well as a cult movie.
I would think so. Yeah, I mean, it even says in sort of your IMDb's and your wikis that mm-hmm. that it was a box office flop, but has gained a following and with video release and over time kind of thing. Mm. I don't think it's as well revered as Lucas was hoping, but
no.
But certainly there is an interested audience.
Yeah. And, I mean, just those little cameos in Guardians of the Galaxy and Endgame, they've kind of renewed people's interest of, like, hey, is this viable?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people liked seeing them.
Yeah.
So, hopefully they'll do a little bit better look on them. But.
Oh, I just had an idea, too. It's so much fun, too. Because they've already established that people respond to non-human characters very well in Guardians of the Galaxy with Groot and Rocket, mm-hmm. right? So what if you have a cameo from Rocket?
Just like, I wasn't even thinking I was doing like the Groot shit with Man Thing, but that's what I was doing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you have a little thing with Rocket. Like, it could be just one of those little things where Rocket's in Howard's office and he says, "Yeah, dude, being a non-human really sucks."
Oh, right. Yeah, to
tie it all together.
It all together is like a little, thanks for being my movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And again, and then you could sort of acknowledge that whole being non-humanoid. Right. Yeah,
actually, that could be the beginning of your movie before you even opening credits. Is like, hey, thanks for the lift.
Yeah, and because he has to get back somehow, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm liking that. Like,
you can't get to a different Earth, can you? Oh, this will do.
Yeah. No, I know this one at least.
Yeah,
I know my way around this neighborhood. Oh, that's the line right there.
Even Rocket go, hey, you have a Groot too? No, it's a different kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you can have that kind of fun. Yeah, it ties it together, and it points out something about the MCU and the universe in general as well. I like it.
That's fun. Embrace some of the more adult aspects of the character, and I mean, gritty noir with absurdism sounds fantastic to me.
Oh,
I mean, it doesn't always work. That fucking puppet movie they just did recently was awful. But with what's her face from the Ghostbusters?
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was. Yeah. Don't go looking for it.
No, do not go looking for it. I still am stunned that a Hanson was involved with that.
Yeah.
The Happy Town Murders.
That was it.
Yeah.
Happy Town Murders. Oh, we gave him a name.
Yeah. Don't do it. If you've done it, we're sorry. If you don't, if you've never done it, don't do it.
Yeah. But I think hopefully that could work here. I mean, Marvel's really good at finding that balance. And if you're working with that Deadpool approach of just embracing the absurdism and
certainly I think that you'd want to have at least one of the Deadpool writers involved with this,
or somebody similar. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Right. But I think the idea of having somebody who's done it well, at least consulting.
I mean, like, even like James Gunn obviously gets it.
Yes.
Like, he's already kind of pulled that with Guardians. So yeah. and figured out a way to mix it. So
I mean, it was so tempting to go with James Gunn for the director, but I didn't.
I have written down like four different people for as possible directors, because they all get it.
Yeah.
I know they'll get it and how to do this properly.
I think my director will as well.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm fairly certain that he will, because he's really good at satire. I mean, the rest of it, maybe he might have to work a little bit harder, but that's where you have a good writer and you have a good consulting,
mm-hmm.
like consulting writer, like somebody from Deadpool. Even if he doesn't write the script, if they can go to him and say, hey, you think this works?
Yeah.
You've done it well before, right?
Yeah. Well, why don't you give us your cast here? Let's start doing that.
Okay, since we're here. I'm going to start with my Howard. And I actually cast him as Dr. Jennings first. I'm like, no, wait a fucking minute. He'd be great as Howard. I'm with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, I like that.
I thought he'd be great as Howard.
Oh,
I mean, he can even do the motion capture.
Yeah, I'm mad I didn't think of it. Yeah, because, I mean, he's going to be a CG character for sure.
Yeah, so, yeah. Because I kind of see him more as the sort of the squatty Howards.
Yeah.
The pear-shaped Howard, right? Like, thin on top and bigger on the
bottom. Yeah, he was too skinny for my liking in Guardians.
Yeah. For my Beverly, because I did keep her as a singer rather than as the nude model. Just because when I saw the movie, when I was watching the movie, I'm like, this is who I want. I put Rihanna in the role. I think I've used her before, but I think she'd be great in that Beverly role.
I cast somebody who could do both.
Yeah.
Well, regardless.
Rihanna could do the modeling type character as well, right? Yeah. I mean, she's beautiful. I'm sorry, but she is.
Yeah.
Right? And I really liked her in Ocean's 8.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why can't she be both?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Exactly. You know, she's doing what she can to make ends meet.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Because it's not exactly like that's the way she's written. Is she's not always successful at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
So I cast the Dr. Jennings character, however you want to go with him. So he could easily be Dr. Bong as well. I went with Alan Tudyk.
Oh yeah, I could see it.
Yeah,
and he could do the voice work for that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I cast a Phil because I had sort of thought in mind about that character. I changed him a little bit, but I cast Ezra Miller because I wanted somebody who can play that slightly awkward role in which he does. Quite well. And I liked the idea that he classifies himself as binary or non-gender.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the idea of having that character in the role because I want Beverly to be sort of confused by his feelings towards her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have this great moment where he's like, I don't care. Like where she starts to have some sort of feelings for Howard. And he's like, well, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that's the nature of his sexuality is like, well, whatever makes you happy, right? I think you could have a really great moment there where you're sort of addressing all of these things.
Yeah, I like the idea of like maybe Beverly being omnisexual, like coining a new phrase here,
right? Yeah, and I wanted a character and an actor who would sort of capture that as well and sort of help her acknowledge it because they've already acknowledged their own gender fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who I went with for my Phil. And I don't know how he'd work him into the way we've worked it now, but I think he'd be a really interesting dynamic.
Well, like I said, I kind of got rid of Jennings entirely because he doesn't – we don't need him
anymore. And I've repurposed my Jennings as Dr.
Yeah. I mean, based on the story we've told, like Alan's just too old for the character to have been an ex of – Beverly's, but I mean, I still love him in that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe it's unrequited feelings then, right? Yeah. Instead, but it could still work, I think, really well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that Phil, I don't know how to work Phil in there now. We'll have to talk about that once we get, but I'll tell you who my director is. And this was completely unintentional. I had forgotten, I'd already forgotten who I had cast as Dr. Jennings, okay? Now Dr. Bong. But I went with Eli Craig, director of Tucker and Dale and Little Evil.
Oh, very good.
And I'd forgotten that I didn't even make the connection between Tucker and Dale and Alan Tudyk until after the fact. But I'm like, I still wanted him because I think that he'd do it really great job.
Yeah, he's a great choice. Yeah. Absolutely great choice. I had lots of director options. Of course, James Gunn, I mentioned. You actually offhandedly mentioned Scott Pilgrim and Edgar Wright would definitely be a great one. Just thinking Taika Waititi would be great. And of course, Deadpool director Tim Miller.
And I actually all the four of those crossed my mind. Yeah. Every single one of them. I'm like, but no, I don't want to go with those guys because...
Yeah, I just kept writing down names and I probably would have got to that one eventually. And I'm like, I'm fine. Like they're all good options.
Any one of those five would do a fabulous job.
Yeah.
Because I wanted that Deadpool, Scott Pilgrim feel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And of course, we already know that James Gunn's good at that type of satire as well. So yeah, I was like, who would fit into that role? So,
Well, I didn't cast like Jennings or Phil mainly because I eliminated him in my script.
Yeah.
So, but that's fine. I mean, we don't know what we're going to do until we get here, and whatever thoughts you have before we convene are your own until then. For my Beverly, I went with Jessica Roth because Happy Death Day. I like the fact that she could do serious and weird comedy at the same time. And it's such an absurd idea, that one.
Yeah.
So I think she could really play to a duck.
Yeah.
And she's, pretty. So if she was, and she can sing, because I think she was in La La Land, I think. I think she'd be really good for that part. Yeah. And she could sing, she could be the nude model if we kept that in there?
And I mean, like you said, she could be both, right?
Yeah. And yeah, I like the idea of her having to do what she needs to do to get from job to job.
You know, you could have a fun bit in there. Sorry, I had to mess with your casting period of time here, but you could have a fun bit there where Howard comes back and she's like, well, damn you, it's about time you came back. I've had to do nude modeling just to get by.
Oh, and maybe this is when her relationship with Lester happens, is while she's away. So we can establish that there's a relationship that's happened while he's been away.
Oh, and you could even have, and then Alec could actually work really well in that role as sort of the sugar daddy kind of role rather than...
Well, I was thinking of somebody who, like, you know, hit on the hot chick at the club, or, you know, maybe was working on a set of one of the modeling shoots and is somebody who's handsome and built himself, but has a scientific mind, because we want like the big bad at the end, and Dr. Bong's pretty cut, despite being ridiculous. I went with Zac Efron.
That works too.
You know, this handsome guy who and I could see him playing crazy.
Oh yeah,
he's we've seen him do it before.
Yeah.
So you know, losing the ex.
I can see that. That could work really well for me, too.
Yeah. For the voice of Howard, I kind of, you know, Seth Green, I thought was fine. I was leaning towards, like, Ralph Garman, who plays Brian on Family Guy.
Okay.
I can hear it. I can see it. But I think I like yours more. Giamatti, just like, oh, I really like that.
Oh, yeah, because I'm thinking about the way I hear Howard in my head, and I'm like, Paul Giamatti is like...
That's the one thing I didn't... Even though Howard's supposed to be around 27... I always felt he feels older to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Character.
Yeah.
In the film, he was 27. I don't know what he's supposed to be in the comic books, but...
Yeah, and I don't recall either. I don't know if they ever really sort of established it, but he's always felt older, like he's like somebody who's world weary. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it even feels like at the start, you know, this guy's kind of been forced into being an adult that he doesn't really want to be. He's not ready to be an adult yet. For my Jennifer Kale, since I cast her, I went with Abby Lee, who's kind of a model actress. She was in Dark Tower, Gods of Egypt, Neon Demon, and Mad Max Fury Road. So,
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. And because, let's face it, the initial version of that character is like in this weird metal bikini and a cape. It's just stupid looking, and I like the idea of let's use it once before she's like, it's too cold for the swamp.
Yeah.
This is just not practical for being in a swamp.
Yeah, and...
because it's a joke you can play to.
Well, you can, and again, if you want to get into absurdism and satire and social commentary, right, she can even... deliver a line saying, you know what, and in this day and age, I don't have to look like this.
Yeah, and that was just it. Like, her character's later adapted. They've updated her costume when she's had it, and they just kind of still have suggestions of where the bikini would have been with the armor, but it's mainly black there. And most of the time, she's out of costume and joined a coven of other witches, and is a bisexual character as well, which would be interesting to play on as well.
Well, certainly, we're kind of going into that whole sexuality thing, which makes sense given the nature of these.
There is a lot of sexuality within the comic book.
Yeah, there is, and I think this film. Yeah. And I think that if we're talking about a relationship between Beverly and Howard, I think that acknowledging that and then interesting characters that can help both of them sort of deal with the oddness of that situation is a really healthy way to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Is talk about support groups and people who are have an understanding of their own sexuality and helping people deal with their own. Wow, we're getting really deep with this, but...
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think Deadpool as a film covers some fairly heavy emotional topics, but still wind up being a really fun film, despite being an emotional one.
Yeah.
Like that original Deadpool, I think, is a perfect film. I can't say that about the sequel, but it's fine.
It's fine, but it certainly doesn't have the arcs of the original.
No, and because there's a lot of emotional depth to that character that he hides his pain under. Howard does it through his snark.
Yeah.
Because he's lost everything.
Literally everything, not really all he has is Beverly. So, yeah, I mean, now I want to sort of figure out how to work my fill in there along with your added cast members. I mean,
The nature of Phil is kind of, I morphed him into the established comic book character of Lester, who becomes Dr. Bong. Like, my Phil basically became a villain. And it was the Jennings character that I wrote out entirely.
Yeah.
Essentially, I just fused the two.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly, but yeah, because of the way I was thinking about using that character, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's nothing saying that he can't be a friend of Beverly's or a member of her band or her mm-hmm. producer or whatever, right? Because I see her doing sort of more of the Rihanna-style music, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe he's her DJ or something like that.
Just to make a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was around when Howard wasn't. So you could have a really fun scene with him and Howard even, right? Where mm-hmm. he's giving Howard shit for all the time he was away.
Yeah. He'd have a small circle of friends he's made because, like you said, he's been around for a while. Yeah. I don't know how long he's been around, but he's been around long enough to have been kidnapped by the Collector and gone to space and back.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, I would think he's got a lot of adventures under his belt, and his office should be show indications of that.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I want him. He's sort of that hard-boiled, beaten-down, world-weary guy that he is.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
But he still has that, like I said before, that compassion and hope.
Yeah, he's still that alien from another planet struggling to live in a world that can't accept him.
Yeah, exactly. Even after mm-hmm. the events of Endgame, right? And you could even acknowledge that too, right? Is that, yeah, he is a post-Endgame character. Yeah, we'll call it character for now. Mm-hmm. And after all of that, and after all everything that people have been through, they still treat him differently,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, for crying out loud, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. What if you got a phone call? Well, yeah, I suppose I can take that case. What do you mean you got canceled, Jessica?
Yeah.
I don't understand, but I'll take the case.
Yeah. That would be a fun, yeah, sort of a fourth wall breaking moment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I like it. I mean, you could have all of these fun moments in there. I mean, you could have him get a bitch about Fury, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, talk about his relationships with the powered heroes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, yeah, it's like I keep getting drawn into this weird stuff, and I don't want this character who's very grounded but is a duck,
yeah.
and keeps getting dragged into things like he doesn't want anything to do with.
No, and he doesn't know the books either, right?
Yeah,
that's the beauty of it is he keeps getting involved with the powered characters, mm-hmm. and he really wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah, I mean, he'd walk away if he didn't have a good sense of right and wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, which is always in question, even though it's never in question.
Oh, yeah, no, like if he defeated some thug on the street or found a bundle of money at a drug den that he helped take down or something, he'd keep it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not pure as the driven snow, man.
No, he absolutely has a moral gray area, but
he's not the Punisher. No. But
he does have that sort of sense of, well, this is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the grand scheme of things.
You know, he'd be just as apt to take that money and give it to a hobo on the street because he's lived there. He's done it.
Yeah. You want to include all those aspects of this character in there, right? No, I like where we're going.
Yeah. I mean, you want to show the heart of that character and the emotional struggles. Yeah. It's funny how they'd make him wide-eyed and shaking with dealing with his PTSD of having being dragged here in the first place.
Oh.
And that is a struggle for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just realized we can't use Ezra Miller because he plays the Flash in DC. They've got like a contract thing. He can't be in Marvel movies.
I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah. It shouldn't be.
That's just the fans thinking, well, you can't be. You're DC. He's Marvel. Well,
I'm still using him because I think he'd be great as that.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's not like it's actually happening. So
it's not like other people haven't done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. Fair enough.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, no, but I like the direction we took. I think that we acknowledged the original well enough, especially with sort of bringing the Thog character in as backstory and as a goal for our villain for this movie, right? He's like trying to bring this guy back.
Yeah, this ultimate bad that may or may not show up.
Yeah.
I think would, if you have to call in the big guns with or his ally, his powered allies of Jennifer Kale and the Man Thing.
Well, so. I think that they're able to stop it before he actually makes it through, but he needs them to stop the process.
Yeah,
because we don't need it's so tropey when the big villain gets through.
Yeah.
And then they have to.
Yeah, I'd rather not do that. It's kind of but Doctor Strange pulled that too, where the villain actually doesn't come through.
Yeah,
you know, gets stuck in the time loop, and it's like, hey, you want out? It's the only way out. We can stop doing this dance.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I certainly do it differently, but yeah, I think that I mean, you could do it either way, but I think that for a first movie, a second movie.
You keep it small. Like, the villain is Dr. Bong.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And he's just trying to bring this guy through, and he gets stopped.
Yeah.
Right?
And that, whatever's coming through, that's the nod to the original film.
Yeah, and that's all it was intended to be. Yeah. Rather than have them have to fight Dr. Bong and then fight, I know, the Overlord or Thog or whatever you want to call him. Mm-hmm. I do want them to say his full name, though.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Oh, I wish I had it ready.
That's it. No more Mr. Nice Duck.
Okay, so we found his full name because it's long and we couldn't remember it. So his full name is Thog the Netherspawn, Overmaster of Somnus.
Yes, and that's when they just shortened it to the Dark Overlord. But I like the idea of them doing that and saying the whole thing every time.
That would be even funnier. It would give you some great outtakes, too, because I can guarantee you they're going to have trouble with that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts about Howard? Anything you want to add?
No, not really. I mean, I think that, like the original movie, I think that the first act of the movie would be him getting home and him settling back in, maybe taking a few small cases just to establish that he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
And to sort of establish his relationships, right? You know, you have that bit with...
Yeah, I would think he'd come back and there'd be lots of, like, bills past due.
Yeah, exactly. Things that would really happen.
Final warning.
Yeah, right? And he comes in and he has no power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then him sort of reconnecting with Beverly and Phil, or whatever you want to call her, mm-hmm. her sort of best friend kind of sidekick that sort of takes Howard to task... Mm-hmm. kind of thing, if we keep that.
Yeah, yeah, I'll reconnect. Well, where were you this time, Ducky?
Yeah.
Oh, I was kidnapped by an alien who had a cosmic zoo. There's a dude with a glove, but I'm fine, I'm back. Yeah. And she's like, oh, the usual.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that she gets it, but this time was maybe a little bit longer than normal, and then she would never say anything about that relationship with mm-hmm. Dr. Bong or Lester. Whoever it turns out being, I mean, both casts are excellent for it. But yeah, you could have them having drinks and really get into the characters in that first act. Then the second act could be sort of Howard coming across his case, finding out that somebody's trying to bring back Thog, the Nether Spawn, Overlord of Somnus.
See, it is funny.
So he's investigating that, and at the same time he's being there. Finding that there's being targeted by somebody else who turns out to be Dr. Bong, who used to be Lester.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you can have that sort of story arc where everybody says, well, yeah, while you were away, it felt like you were going to be gone for good this time. So I kind of got involved with somebody else. It didn't work out, but he never wanted to let me go. But I don't know when this happened to him.
Yeah. He's a little scary now.
Yeah. Well, she could say he was a little scary before, but now he's really scary.
Yeah.
Right. That's why she broke it off, is because there was something about him that made her uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think you could even acknowledge that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just to say it one more time, Thog the Netherspawn. See, there's your first blooper.
Oh, you got through it twice.
Yeah, Thog the Netherspawn, Overlord of Somnus.
Say that three times fast.
I couldn't say it three times slow. Yes, but yeah, I think that could be fun to sort of have that sort of be your third, your second act, and the third act having it all culminate.
Mm-hmm. No, I like what we've come up with. If you like what we've come up with, let us know. Do you want to see a Howard the Duck reboot? Or do you think it's best to leave this half-baked idea hanging in a Chinese restaurant?
Leave him to cameos in the MCU.
Yeah. Let us know at Invasion of the Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. And of course, you can leave us your suggestions, your questions, your comments about really any episode we've ever done, or suggestions on future episodes you'd like to see. We're always up for a fan challenge. And if you got a good one, we might do it.
Yeah, we very, very well may do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, next week's 200, folks. This is going to be a good one. And if you don't like it, it's your fault, because we let you choose the movie. We ran a bunch of polls on our social media, on Twitter specifically, I do believe.
Yes,
and
Twitter, yeah.
We broke down, we did the genres of types of movies, and then we did the subgenres, and then we actually listed some movies. So for once, you actually know what's coming.
Yes.
But I'm not going to tell you here. You're going to have to wait till next week for 200. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and a short review. Over on your favorite podcast devices, iTunes or whatever. It helps get earballs on the show.
And we like earballs on our show.
We like as many earballs on our show as possible.
Yes. Do it.
Tickle those earballs with our lovely, sultry voices.
Oh, that got creepy.
Earballs!
Earballs! I like doing that voice. Too bad it's so hard.
Thanks, Fog. All right. Tell everybody where you can find us. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Libsyn, iHeartRadio, and so many more. Just check out our link tree on our social media for some of the great places to find us. But we're probably on your favorite podcast app. And we're even on
frickin' YouTube.
So check us out. We drop every Tuesday on your favorite podcast provider and every Thursday on YouTube. All right. Well, that was it for Howard the Duck. Yeah, that was crazy. I'm glad we did it. That was a fun. I still like the original movie, no matter what people think of it. I'm sure it has its detractors for sure.
And you know, it's not a movie for everyone. I totally get that. But it is still, if you take it as it's intended, as a stupid, fun movie, then it's a stupid, fun movie.
It's a stupid, fun movie. Just lower your expectations. You'll be fine. You know what? I actually, last night, I lowered my expectations and I watched Hellboy, the new one. To be honest, if you're a Hellboy comic book fan, there's a lot to like in there, because there is references, like little bits in there all over the place, right out of the comic books. It's certainly not as artfully done as Guillermo del Toro. A lot less money spent, and it's not as pretty, but it's still a pretty good movie. I don't think it deserved the hate it got, and it's mainly because everybody loved the Guillermos, and me among them, but I wasn't disappointed.
I was actually thinking about watching that this weekend myself, so that might be this evening's viewing.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. So it's another one of those comic book things that I was like, oof, the Guillermos are so good, I don't know if I want to do this. And I mean, we're not likely to get a sequel to this one, but even despite it setting up for it, but there's a lots of nods. If you read the Hellboy universe books, there's a lot you're gonna like in this movie. If you're not, then I can see maybe where the stuff wasn't landing as well as you might have hoped. But it certainly pays a homage all over the place.
Yeah, and that might be why it didn't do as well, because
I think Stephen Harper was a pretty good Hellboy.
David Harbour?
I'm sorry, David Harbour.
Yeah, so I thought you said Stephen Harper, our former prime minister. I was a little confused.
No.
I you know what? I saw the trailers and stuff like that, and he looked good, and I think that he's got the talent to do it, so why not, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely things I didn't like about the movie, but you know, not for this episode. I don't know, maybe not for the show, but no. Maybe if you want to talk to me about Hellboy, you can do that on our social media site too. Yeah. And I'll talk to you about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a different comic book character, but that's it for Howard the Duck. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And we're getting the quack out of here.
I've given up trying to assimilate. Mm-hmm. I've got to get back to my own kind. Although, I have developed a greater appreciation for the female version of the human anatomy.
Oh, Howard, you really are the worst. Come on, let's watch David Letterman. Come on.
Okie dokie.
You know, I got a feeling my life's really going to change since you fell into a ducky.
Yeah, well, I'm glad somebody's happy.
If I could just get my career back on course, I'd only have the old standard worry left.
What's that?
Just can't seem to find the right man.
Maybe it's not a man you should be looking for.
You think I might find happiness in the animal kingdom, Ducky?
Like they say, Dal, love's strange. We could always give it a try.
Okay. Let's go for it, Mr. Macho.
What do you mean? Okay. It was a joke. Listen. I'm pretty tired.
It's just that you're so incredibly soft and cuddly.
Beth. Let's be realistic. I mean, my apartment's zillions of miles from here. You're 3 feet taller than I am.
I just can't resist your intense animal magnetism.
Whoops. Anyway, where will it all lead? Marriage? Kids? A house in the suburbs?
Let's just face it. It's fate.
No, it's not. I've got a headache.
And I got the aspirin.
Be gentle.
Just one good night kiss, sweet ducky. Come on, Howard. I was just kidding. Good night.